Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston. We are here with Peter James Haviland. Peter is about a 20-year-old plus investigator that has worked with a lot of paranormal investigations. I do believe he's also a hypnotherapist. Welcome, Peter.
Hey, how you doing today?
Oh, can't complain, and even if we do, nobody likes to listen to it.
I understand.
So tell us a little bit about what got you into the paranormal and a little bit about yourself, and we'll kind of just run with the punches from there.
Sure, not a problem. Well, I think, as in most people that have gotten into the paranormal, they probably had something happened to them themselves and kind of brought them forth in investigating. I'm no different. I was about 12 years old. And I was watching monster movies in my parents' house, and the room got really cold. And the dog that was with me, my dog, she was an Australian dingo, I think, or mixture. But anyway, she turned around and began to bark. And I turned around and I looked at what she was barking at, and my parents' house. It was a two-story, so she was looking at the stairs, and I looked up the stairs and I saw my grandfather walking down the stairs, and that was cool. But you know, he had passed the year before, so I kind of walked over there and I watched him walk down the stairs, and there was no sound, there was no eerie music or anything like that. It was just it's kind of like I was watching a film loop, really. And as he came down the stairs, you know, I didn't feel anything, but I saw him walk into the hall closet, which I kind of thought was a little odd. But you know, being 12, you know, you really don't think about stuff like that. So, being kind of stupid like I normally am, I opened the door, not to really think that he was in there. I just didn't know what to expect. So when I opened it, of course, he wasn't there. But there was a plaque that he brought over from Italy, and it hung in two of the houses that he built in New York. So it was that point in time, and I kind of felt that he moved to what he knew. And from then on, I mean, I read a lot of books on ghosts and haunted houses. You know, some of the authors, D. Scott Rogo and Hans Holzer, and you know, folks like that, and learned quite a bit on ghosts and haunted houses. Even at that age, I kind of saw a lot of the similarities of the hauntings, and just kind of, you know, I would go to school with a book on haunted houses with me. I mean, people used to call me the ghost boy at that point. they kind of thought I was weird because I would go nowhere without having something on haunted houses or ghosts. I went into high school. Had a really cool psychology teacher that allowed me to write on haunted houses and ghosts. As long as it fit the curriculum, I could look. He would tell me that as long as it fits the realm of parapsychology, and if I wrote it like that, he wouldn't have an issue. So that's what I did. Got into college, and basically the same thing. My psych prof let me into that as well. And so, I mean, I got into hypnosis because I wanted to work with the police on cold cases, which I've had the opportunity to do several times, along with missing child cases and missing persons. What I've used is a witness recall and forensic hypnosis to pull up more data on what the witnesses had saw and experienced. And I've had police get information that they needed, or also clarified through that. I looked at and I saw the I compared and saw how hypnosis not only helped with you know, fears and phobias and things like that, but I saw how it went hand in hand with studying the paranormal, mostly on RSPK or recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis. That's where we ourselves create hauntings through traumatic instances and stress and triggers from the people or person or people in our environment, and it tends to mimic a haunting, but it's a little more different than that. It's usually tied to an event that had happened just before or a little bit before what the event was, and it's usually in direct correlation to what the trigger of that event was. For instance, if you get in an argument with your teenager and you want them to clean the kitchen, and they basically tell you, you get in an argument and they tell you no and they run off. And, you know, maybe half an hour later, plates start falling out. And, that is a direct correlation to RSPK. It's often misunderstood. People look at it as a haunting. When you tell them what poltergeist activity is or RSPK, I usually put them in the chair and look at what the event was and what their experience was, and I can usually pick out, what the problem was. Now, if it's something to do with a traumatic event, I can isolate that too, remove the event, replace it with the positive reality, and I've had haunting stop that way as well. So it's kind of me in a nutshell. Outside of I've been in the field for probably a little over 30 years, I'm a little bit different than most people that investigate. As discussed, I look at things as a parapsychologist instead of a quote unquote ghost hunter a ghost investigator. I'm also a private investigator as well, so I have that mindset of whatever the evidence is what the answer is. So I don't go into a home looking at trying to prove that a haunting's there. Uh-huh. I go in there with the mindset that I want to find without what the answer is, whether it's a haunting or whether it's something else. It's a different mindset than just trying to, if you interview somebody and, you tend to think that, okay, you know exactly what it is, but once you make your mind up on that, you're really not doing the investigation any good. You have to be open-minded and, skeptical, but open-minded and willing to go where the evidence leads you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I fully agree with that. I actually don't have my private investigator's license in the state of Ohio anymore, but I did have a private investigator's license for quite a number of years, and it helped me understand how a real paranormal investigation should work because I already knew how to investigate. I think a lot of people in the paranormal world don't quite understand that calling yourself an investigator and being an investigator sometimes are two different things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it is. And as I said, it's a mindset. A lot of the people that investigate now, they have good intentions. I'm not saying that they don't have good intentions. But you really have to, as I said, let the evidence speak for itself, whatever that may be. Now, if it's something that I was kind of hoping it would be and it ends up being something else, I have to accept that. You know, so, you know, and that's what I tell my clients, too, is that, you know, just put out of your mind everything that happened, you know, but, you know, the event that they had and the reason why they called me over. I mean, that's important, too. But, you know, just not to have any preconceived notions and just let us work the case. And the folks I've worked with that I deal with that, I mean, they're pretty satisfied so far. I haven't had anybody call me up and want to shoot me or anything, so I guess I'm doing pretty well.
Well, some of the aspects of paranormal investigation are just as similar to being a criminal investigator or anything else. You do have mm-hmm. to follow those pieces of the puzzle, and sometimes they don't lead you where you think they're going to go. Somebody mm-hmm. may seem to be guilty if you're a criminal investigator, but it turns out that you find out that it has absolutely nothing to do with that, and the whole situation just kind of turns and flips over on you and surprises the crap out of you sometimes.
Exactly. And that's kind of what I enjoy about it, too, is in all honesty, you really don't know what you're getting into until you wrap it up.
Uh-huh. Now, I know you spent a lot of time in hypnotherapy, and hypnotherapy is it's interesting in the criminal field because it can come up with a lot of key aspects that are uh-huh. hidden that people don't remember, or sometimes they just simply don't want to remember. And I know there are technical terms for that.
or traumatic events that will block the mind from you remembering.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot, too.
And now the reason I mention that is because it has came up throughout the years on hypnotherapy, more in the UFO end than the paranormal end, but has been used in the paranormal end with ghosts as well. So it's an interesting thing that you bring that up. From alien abduction to simply regressed memory, like you're mentioning right there, you know, you can have a scary event, and then the back of your mind blocks out most of that event, and somewhere along the line, and I've actually seen this happen, I was on an investigation following through with somebody that used a hypnotherapist and found mm-hmm. out that it ended up being something that really happened in their life, but the mind blocked it out, so they kept thinking that these events were reoccurring, and they were seeing it as a ghost.
Correct. And that's probably the RSPK that they were broadcasting into the environment of what the subconscious knowing what it is and trying to play it to the conscious, which is what we physically see, to either let you know what it is or how it was protecting you so it you can understand what it is, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. I know you've had some experience with paranormal equipment, so let's go into that equipment a little bit, because you and I have had discussions over RTP and several other paranormal groups on Facebook about how sometimes this equipment can be misleading as well.
That is correct. And first of all, let me state this, is that, I think folks kind of get a little confused on when they use scientific equipment. Digital cameras and stuff like that, it's really not scientific equipment. There's really no equipment that finds ghosts. What you're actually doing is you're measuring around an event, and those are what is captured by EMF fields or temperature drops or FLIR cameras, stuff like that. That you're recording what happens around the event. The event itself, there is absolutely nothing that will bring up or point to a ghost. A lot of people think that a lot of the phone stuff, the phone apps, will find ghosts for you, and phones aren't made for that. And one of the big issues with that is that the phone itself has an EMF field and will pass off signals periodically to check in with the tower and stuff like that. So if you're thinking that you're seeing a ghost, it might be the phone. I'm not trying to pick on anybody or anything like that, but you have to use common sense on a lot of that stuff. I use a Tri-Field Natural. Tri-Field Natural is very sensitive on picking up EMF fields. It will pick up a lightning strike a mile away. So if when using that piece of equipment, you can't hold it. You can, but you're not going to get a an accurate reading from it, because it's also picking up the electric field that is around us. I mean, we have, you know, we have an electric field around us. It's minute, but it's there. So, you know, it's better if you place that somewhere and let it settle down, and then you can measure your EMF fields that way. Let's see. And then, you know, the rest of the stuff, pretty much, I mean, everybody really knows what thermal gauge is. And I use an anemometer to measure the drafts in a home a lot, because a lot of times people will say that, you know, they feel a draft, a cold spot, and things like that. So that's pretty sensitive equipment right there to let you know if you have air current flowing around in your home. You know, it tells you how, you know, how fast it's going, what, you know, what direction it is, what the temperature is of it. So I find that very helpful too. I don't know a lot of people that use that. Sometimes I use a weather station, you know, a portable weather station, barometric pressure, in the home, temperature, you know, anemometers also on it as well. And, you know, and because a lot of folks just talk about, you know, when they get headaches when an event's happening. Well, sometimes the drop of barometric pressure will cause that to get a headache because of the unevenness of what's going on in your head. So for lack of a better term. So I find that very helpful as well.
You mentioned something very interesting earlier that is true. Just so everybody knows, the reason you can't find a piece of equipment to pick up a ghost is because we have no idea what type of readings ghosts have, whether they have readings at all, what type of energy they use, whether they use energy at all. So it's kind of a guessing game. And in the science world, when you're doing a guessing game, and most of science, just so you guys the listeners know, most of science is a guessing game. A lot of the science that we picked up, a lot of the radio frequencies we picked up, a lot of these things is because we stumbled upon it. Oh, hey, what's this? I'll be doggone.
Exactly.
By tinkering around. The reason you can't pick up a ghost yet is because we haven't stumbled onto that one thing that identifies it. So people play around with a lot of this equipment. And I'm a big person on telling everybody, because I've been in the electronics and audio field for a number of years, that EVP meters, especially the ones you buy for ghost hunts, they aren't accurate. I mean, my house alone has, I have a whole audio studio. I have at least 5 televisions, if not 6. That doesn't count my surround sound system upstairs, and that doesn't count the power lines that are right outside. All of that's going to pick up something.
Exactly. And there's something also called dirty EMF fields, and that's all the that is all the leftover electromagnetic fields that, you know, we broadcast so many different I can't think of the word at the moment, frequencies. You know, you don't know exactly what you're picking up there either. I mean, you know, radio, wireless, electromagnetic fields in the grid under the house or in the walls. I mean, you really don't know what you're picking up. That's even questionable at best. The only way that you could have any handle on that is if you do a background reading to know exactly what you're dealing with in the home. And if there's a deviation from that, then, you know, you might have something. It's not, doesn't necessarily mean that you have something. So, you know, it's really kind of all iffy at best. I studied the trends, you know, when I'm dealing with RSPK cases, you know, when did it happen? Who did it happen to? What happened? And I have folks keep a log for me, because a lot of the times, you know, some folks think that, you know, going out to a home, staying there all night or for 4 hours, because TV shows, you know, shows 4 hours as an investigation. And I've had people tell me that that's what they do. When you catch something, and you're not living with these folks 24 hours a day. So you don't really know what they're experiencing other than what they're telling you what they're experiencing, unless you work the case, you know, all the time. But yet still, you're not living at the home unless you do move into the home for, you know, for a period of time. And then you have the opportunity to kind of see what they're doing, even if it happens. energy cycles out. So they might have had a big event of moving something. Could be small, could be big. You might not have activity for a month because the energy has to build back up again before it produces itself. So you just got to kind of like I said before, you just got to kind of have an open mind and just kind of go with it. Honestly, I mean, I hate to say that, but I mean, just kind of it. You have to just kind of go with it.
Well, the key thing for listeners to understand that are listening tonight is there's a big difference between paranormal research and study and ghost hunting. Now, I'm not going to downtread any ghost hunters. Some of them are very good friends of mine, and some of them have television shows. They're very nice people. They work very, very hard at what they do. I encourage people to watch those shows. But reality is, a scientist doesn't go into a project and think, gee, in 4 hours, I'm going to have the answer. They do this sometimes for years, sometimes repetitively over and over and over again, and still never come up with that answer. And paranormal study is the same way. If you're actually going to spend time in it, it's going to take a lot of observation, a lot of testing, and you still may not get everything because reality is, like Peter just said, you would have to be in the home with the person 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and sometimes it may take 2 or 3 years of that. Firstly, they're probably not going to let you do that. And secondly, even then, they may not be giving off the whole impression of the situation, so you might still miss something because they're going to be on their guard when somebody new is in their home.
Exactly, because folks, present themselves a whole lot differently to the outside than they do to the inside.
Absolutely. I'm going to pause for a minute, let everybody know we're on BBS Radio, Digital Radio. Make sure that you tune in. If this is your first time, there's a lot of outstanding people on this radio station. A couple of little news projects. If you're in the Ohio area, don't forget to join the Marengo Flea Market every weekend, Monday through Friday. They're closed, but they open up on Friday afternoon at 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. They're open Saturday and Sunday. They have a show coming on the 19th for locals. It's going to have local firefighters, it's going to have the local churches in there, and hopefully by this October there's going to be a live paranormal investigation with some pretty famous names from not only Ohio but television, so keep that in mind. In addition to that, there's a project coming on the 19th as well called the Goose Project. It's going to have a lot of local paranormal investigators from the state of Ohio, a couple of psychologists and speakers. Make sure, if you haven't looked at that yet and you're not going to be at the Marengo Flea Market on the 19th, to look at thegooseproject.com. Wonderful place. There's going to be some great speakers, including Brian and a few other people that I know. So I encourage you to see that. We're talking to Peter Haviland. And he's been a paranormal investigator for 20 years here in the United States. He's written a couple of books, I do believe, and he's a hypnotherapist. So I want to thank Peter once again for being with us. We've been talking about equipment. Let's kind of jump into a couple other things, Peter. Tell us a little bit about some of the unique experiences that you've had, and we'll kind of roll with the punches there. And also, anything else that you want to bring up here in the next 30 minutes or so.
Okay, not a problem. I was working one case one time. The lady told me that when she was in her room, that she would see her rocking chair move back and forth, and it really scared her. So we set up a static cam in her room to try to see what was moving the chair, whether it was energy or if it was something else. We found out when looking at the film afterwards, because I tend to like to use static cams more than wiring up a whole house for sound, only because you could be working different things, and you're always going to go back and look at the film anyway. So I'd rather have the camera in there, so you're not having to worry about anything. Plus, it looks at the room to make sure who's coming in and going out and all that other stuff. But so when we looked at the film, found out that there was a board that went under the door to the top of the stairs, and when people walked up the stairs, it would creak, and then you stepped on the one board, and it made a noise into the bedroom, and the cat that always laid on the chair would freak out and go under the bed. So that's what that was. Which goes to show that, you know, something isn't what you always think it is. I have worked with, I had a gentleman that I worked with that had, it was a genuine RSP case. What had happened was, he was, lack of a better term, molested when he was a kid at a camp. And he kept that kind of locked up into his subconscious. And what would happen is that if any time that somebody had showed any type of a leadership role, or made him feel like that he was less than who he was, he would manufacture RSPK into his area, and he had bite marks, he had scratch marks, and these were kind of related to what had happened to him, and he was bringing them physically up on his body, which was amazing, honestly. He had also seen one point in time a mass that pretty much scared them out of their house one night. They gave me a call like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I went over there to see what was going on. And, you know, of course, the event had already passed, but you can kind of feel it was a little bit of electricity in the air of something. That was one of the times that I used hypnosis to try to work with him on his the past issue he had. And we got to calm down quite a bit, but I had suggested to him to seek a counselor to see if he could learn some more coping mechanisms. He had done that, and he tells me that everything's cool now. So I have also dealt with, let's see, house out in Galveston. People had claimed that they had seen what looked like children's faces in the attic of a 1900 storm owner, a 1900 storm survivor of the house. And when we were there, not only did we see those faces, I've got it on film, that there was also a physical phenomena of folks getting pushed down the stairs. And I never was able to find exactly what it was, but there was at least three people that night that that claimed that they felt like that they were being pushed down the stairs. One of the owners that was there told me that not only was he pushed down the stairs, but he fell down the stairs and injured himself really badly. I was never able to come up with a solution to that, other than it seemed like it was some type of energy force. And I think maybe it might have been tied to the 1900 storm. There were a lot of deaths. There were a lot of things that happened that, I mean, it's a lot of it that you really – some of you just don't know what happened, but a lot of it's documented as far as how they disposed of the bodies. What they did is they put them on rafts and tried to float them out to get rid of the bodies. And what ended up happening was that the bodies would float back. And of course, you can imagine the what they would look like and what the issue was. A lot of families didn't want to do that, so they would take their family members and they would wall them up in the houses. So it's not uncommon that what you're doing when folks are doing restorations on some of those really old houses that are out there, sometimes I find bones, in the walls and in the staircases, which is just really, really weird. I had a lady one time that was claiming that she was being attacked, for the lack of a better word. Well, I don't want to say exactly what happened, but she was being attacked physically at night. And I had an older FLIR that I was using. It was one of the older black and white ones that kind of looked like the TV cameras. And it was black and white, and they had shades of gray to show you different levels of the temperature. And unfortunately, I couldn't record with that one because it wasn't built for that. But I did see masses in the room when she claimed that she would see something. I at that point in time, I also felt the physicality of what she was what she talked about. I felt like a physical punch in my stomach. Brought me to one knee at one point. And that was when we were discussing what the activity, what the issue was that it was happening to her at night, and what she claimed that she thought it was. And when we got to that point, that's when the physicality had happened to me. It was almost like it was trying to protect either her or the, you know, or itself from being recognized. It's the only thing I can think of. I've dealt with, I don't deal with a whole lot of commercial places. A lot of that is because, you know, since the, since TV has, you know, got a lot of these, you know, a lot of folks have a lot of locations that are on TV now. A lot of people see that it's become an industry. And they like, you know, they could figure that they can get an extra $30 or $50 on a haunted room, so they will call you in. And I've had a lot of bed and breakfasts call me out, and I later find that you know, I had one room, one place, one time that claimed that there was a phantom smell of perfume, and later to find out that there was a couple of sachets of a perfume under a bed. And it was the smell that they had. They said it was, and I told them that you know, if they better rectify the situation, or I would get a hold of the newspapers to tell them that they were frauds. And you know, I ended up not telling them because they corrected it, and the people that owned it ended up selling it to somebody else, and it's just a normal bed and breakfast now. You know, that's one thing that does kind of concern me, though, is that, you know, as you had told, you know, you talked about, you know, see, I've got friends that are on TV, too. You know, people have to understand that there's a difference between the study of the paranormal versus the entertainment of the paranormal. Uh-huh. And, you know, and it's really, you know, it's cool that, you know, a person will watch a show and that it seems like it's interesting to them, and they want to learn, you know, they want to actually learn what the science is, you know, that's awesome. But when you get, teams that watch a show and that's all that they use for the show and not know, what happens behind the scenes and what the theory is and things like that. You know, that's when you get into a lot of issues. You have to understand when you're dealing with a person's home and businesses, you know, that's their investment. You know, you can't mess around with a person's investment. Nobody wants to live on the spooky house on the corner. You know, so you want to be as discreet as possible. You don't want to show up in a car that looks like Ecto-1. You know, I'm all for having team pride and team shirts when you're out in public doing promotional things. But when you show up at a person's house, you know, you try to wear as normal clothes as possible because you don't want the neighbors to know what's going on, especially if the neighbor, you know, you don't know who the neighbors are. You don't know if they're like a Mrs. Kravitz and tell everybody what's going on. You don't want to get those folks in that position. And, you know, and that could be a problem if that happens like that.
The other reality is when you're dealing with television is it's not as cut and dry as people think. Walk in there with recorders and flashlights and an EMF detector and then sit around for an hour and a half and go, oh my God, did you hear that? I've got a ghost. It doesn't quite work that way. Not to offend any of my friends or anybody else that does television. It's great. It's entertaining. It takes a lot of work to do, as I had said before. But it's a lot more complicated than that. You may go into a home and get absolutely nothing. You may have to look at the psychological values of the home and the situation. You may actually have to determine some scientific stuff by talking to professors on the evidence that you have and seeing if anything can even remotely relate to situations. There's a lot of different aspects that are very, very technical that go on every day that are scientific in paranormal study that are not in ghost hunting.
Exactly. And, for instance, on my team, I have a lot of folks that do specific things. I have a behavioral psychologist that I sometimes bring out to do interviews with me, so they can assess the family unit to see, you know, what we're dealing with, if there's abuse in the family and things like that. What I do is I look at the events and I go through. I look at the person, I look at abilities, I look at the trends and things like that while they're doing that. You know, I have a gentleman that does nothing but he looks at the house for structural issues and issues with appliances and things like that, because a lot of squeaks and moans and groans come from structural issues with the home. Electromagnetic fields could be bad appliances, bad wiring, and that's all he does. And we kind of do that and layer everything on top of it to see exactly what the event is. When I have somebody do the research of the house, you know, I'm the only person that has the information on, the events of why they're there, but also I'm the only one that has the research besides the researcher. So this way I like our investigators to not know what's going on. I don't want them to have a preconceived notion of anything. So, you know, when something comes up, I can say that they had no knowledge and, you know, they're pulling up either A, what you've experienced, B, it's not there, or C, it's something else. I can understand why people, would get really excited on going on investigations and stuff, and everybody knows everything. So you have really no controls over what your investigation is. And, that's alarming too.
Yeah, and I can certainly understand that. Personally, if I were out in the field, I don't investigate myself, just so the audience knows. I'm very upfront about that. I've been upfront with Peter before. I tag along with investigators so that I can learn. I like to talk about investigation. I like to have the investigators on to talk about how they really operate, because it takes a lot of work to do what Peter's doing. And my forte happens to be marketing and interviewing and spending time on the radio and so forth. So what better place to do it when I'm fascinated with the paranormal myself? But I can understand that a little bit. I personally prefer, when I tag along with everybody, not to know the history and not to know the research, because this way I can observe myself and I can learn how it is and I can formulate my own opinions. And a lot of times it's a lot better than that. Now, I'm going to ask you this personally, Peter, because spending time in universities and so forth, I've learned this to be a case with some of the people that I've spoke with. A lot of times, if you come in with preconceived notion, it happens just like anything else. You build a mass effect. This is why big places like the Ohio State Penitentiary and Waverly and so forth, people like to see ghosts a lot of times, even when they're possibly not there. And just so everybody knows, I've spent three times at Waverly now. I've got a handful of EVPs. Two times we were there for almost 8 hours and got absolutely nothing. But everybody gets something when you see it on TV. Well, that's a mass effect.
Yes, it is. And it eventually grows into its own, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, notoriety. When you go there, you're excited, you expect to see something. So every little nuance, every crack, groan, whatever, you jump on it. Oh, that's so-and-so. Or they read about, I think it's at the place you just talked about in Kentucky.
Waverly.
Yeah.
Or if sanatorium. They studied about.
When they read about the nurse that died in one of the rooms, then they seem to think that, you know, if it's a shadow, maybe that's her. And I discuss that with a lot of folks too. there's also, if enough people go in with the belief of something that's there, you know, I tend to think, and I could be completely wrong on this, sometimes you can manufacture what's happening. You know, I look at the Philip experiment, for instance. It happened in Toronto, I think, in 73, 74, when they actually manufactured a ghost by meeting for a year or a little over a year. They made up the background. They made up the name of the ghost. I think the only thing that was real was the location. And they met, they talked about it, they started talking to him, and eventually table rap started happening, and then the levitation of the table that was caught on film a couple of times actually, and that was manufactured by a group. So you got, if I look at it that I look at that and I go, well, okay, if you can manufacture something with it's the same group of people for over a year, can people that have you know, if you have 4, 5, 10 people that are thinking, you know, they're aware of all of the sightings and you know, everything they've seen on TV, can they actually manufacture something there? And to me, it's a possibility. You know, it's you know, like you know, Ted Serios, when he was taking photographs, you know, and I look at that and I go, okay, well, if you could produce something on film, then, you know, when you look at EVPs, well, could that actually be the subconscious being broadcast onto tape because of what the knowledge level that you have, or could it be thoughts of ourself? I mean, we don't even know what conscious is. So how do you know?
Well, that's a very good point. I mean, audio speaking scientifically, I sway away from ghost boxes. I sway away from a lot of the apps and so forth, because I understand that generally speaking, if you play back all of that and you cycle through all that, you're going to get communication. Why? Because there are thousands and billions of signals and bits and pieces of those signals coming in. Somewhere along the line, you're going to relate with that, even if it's not a ghost. Audio recorders themselves, of course, you take out all the radio frequencies and so forth. And then if you get something in the background, you question, well, that shouldn't be there. Why? And it becomes an anomaly a handful of times. It's not nearly as common as people think, but you could have a very valid point. We have no idea how the mind works. So when you're standing there with a digital recorder or a regular tape recorder, and you're picking up something that's not in the room with you, how do you know it's not your mind?
Exactly. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, that sometimes EVP is captured and you can, I mean, if you get a name, date, places and events, which has happened. I mean, you know, Sarah Estep that started the American Association for EVP, you know, she has some really interesting EVP she caught on a shoebox recorder. From when she would go to a Point Lookout in Maryland, I mean, she caught somebody that states, "I'm looking at the war," and it's clear. It's not something that you filter down and hear a robot talk. You know, it's actually clear. And that's what kind of worries me about a lot of the EVP that I hear too, is, you know, they keep telling you, well, you need to train your ear when you're looking at the, you know, when you're trying to filter all these things down. Well, yeah, I can understand. I get that. But on the other side of the coin, how do you know that you're actually capturing something? And if it sounds close enough to, you know, if it sounds like Bob Goes to the Store and you give an audio cue to somebody, hey, listen to this. Does it sound like Bob Goes to the Store?
Yeah.
You're going to hear Bob Goes to the Store every time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? It's a psychological implant at that point, because somebody's already told you what you're listening to. You're going to hear that because that's what you're looking for.
Exactly.
I always tell people it's a little bit more than listening to the ear. When you're working in the audio world, if you're tuning any type of music or program or so forth, and I'm sure even the gentleman that works on the show here, Donald, would agree with that. When you're listening in the background, you have to have a keen ear to make sure that you make sure to pull out all the mistakes and possibly edit things and know when there's an audio issue and things along those lines. It's all a part of working in electronics and audio. But EVP... when you look at the early studies, is not what most people think it is. You know, you put out a ghost box, and the ghost box plays things back and forth and cycles through radio stations, blah, 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 blah. Well, you're going to pick up 1,000 different noises there. You're going to pick up 1,000 different communications. Somebody's going to say Sarah in a place where Sarah may have died. It's just a fact of life.
You look at more percentages than you are the paranormal.
Yeah, that's exactly what you're doing. Now, if you're cycling through all of that and somehow you get a full conversation when you're playing this back after a recording that you hear somebody go, hello, hello, my name is Sarah with her first name and last name. I died last week. And is somebody there? Well, that's more than a coincidence. But what are the odds of really getting that?
it's a lot rarer than people think it is. It's the same with as hauntings. I mean, I just got off the phone with somebody before we talked, and she's claiming that in her apartment that she is seeing an old lady sitting in a chair, and she said that she got a photograph of it. She sent me the photograph, and I'm not seeing it. That doesn't mean that, it might or might not be there. I'm not saying I'm the see all end all. But, when people have a preconceived notion of what they think they see, they will see it. And I've seen that more times than not. And I've gotten in more than one argument over it, too. And I just don't argue anymore now.
Well, and just so everybody knows, I've worked in EVP for a number of years, and I have gotten a handful of things that that were real EVPs. I had one EVP of a person literally say when I was investigating out in Louisiana who they were and who they were standing directly by. When you play it back, you can hear very distinctively hear it. They say their name, and they say they're standing by Chris Houston. There was nobody there. We had a video camera running at the time because I put the video camera on me. You can see that nobody's there when I'm doing the recording. Yet, ironically, you can't hear it until you play it back, as one example. So it is possible to get this stuff. It's just
not as common as
people think.
Exactly. And I'm not, I'm not trying to take away from, the people that like to do this as a hobby, because a lot of folks also like to do this because of the adrenaline rush. You know, they like to go out and get scared and scare themselves. That's fine. Just know what you're doing and know what you're dealing with, and know how the theory of things work, and then, it'll be better knowing all that than just going in blind.
Oh, absolutely. And we all start off blind somewhere along the line. When I started on my path, I started looking because of something that personally happened to me. I'm sure Peter was the same way, as he explained earlier. You know, we all start on this path and we all learn as we go. And then we kind of develop our niche on how to do things. My niche is to listen to people like Peter and express the reality of the paranormal from those that have been in it for 20 or 30 years and learn from that. We all grow as we go. Don't be afraid to be wrong. I can tell you right now, and I've had people laugh because I've looked at pictures and said, hey, look at this. And, well, you know that's a bird, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing, too. If you notice, like, on their team's websites and their Facebook pages and things like that, they will post something and ask for opinion, but they will get offended when you come in and you say, well, I think it's this. It's my opinion, but you're asking for opinions, and I'm giving an honest opinion. But they're so set on, well, it's this. Well, then why are you posting it for an opinion? And, a lot of folks do that now, and I just don't understand that. I mean, a lot of people talk about peer review, but can't handle the criticism on a peer review. So don't do a peer review.
Well, social media and media, when it comes to the paranormal, has done some wonderful things, but it's also put us back about 25 years. The reality is everybody sees television. They think this is the way it is. And then they catch a picture of dust. They catch a picture of a reflection. They catch a picture and it's pixelated. And they think, hey, I've got something. But then you have a real paranormal investigator or a real paranormal scientist or a real person that's been in the study and review for years come back and say, did you ever think it was this? And they don't want to hear that.
Oh, exactly. Especially when a person will post a shot that is a low-resolution picture to begin with, and then they blow it up, and now you have the pixelation from the low-res shot is bigger, and then they try to put together something that's there, and it's just not. It's just a low-res shot with its that's pixelated, and now you're dealing with pareidolia now because you think that's what it is. You convince yourself what that is, and it very well might have been what you think it is, but the shot doesn't look like it. You know, it's blurred. It's it's like a lot of the Bigfoot photos. You know, they're all blurry, but you know, something's there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I had that discussion quite recently with the new position that opened up on NASA. It happens all across the board. We have a new, not so new position that's a planetary defense officer. The planetary defense officer has actually been around since the International Accords when we built the space station. Basically, what a planetary defense officer does is has nothing to do with defending the Earth from aliens, has nothing to do with defending the Earth from biological contaminants. Although Sarah, our last planetary defense officer, which I had a chance to meet quite briefly, was a delightful lady that worked in the CDC, and she did put up plans to say, hey, look, if we bring something back, we should make sure it doesn't have contaminants that we don't know about. The reality is a planetary defense officer does absolutely nothing like people want to believe it does. They monitor NASA, make sure the equipment's going to work safe and sound for the astronauts, keep communications on Earth stable when something as a situation may happen up there. When you've got dozens of different countries sending people up to a space station, if that space station loses communication, has an emergency situation, equipment breaks or so forth, panic sets in. Their job is to calm people down and say, look, we're looking at the situation. We're going to find out what it is. Don't go into war over this.
Well, that's good we have that buffer then.
Yeah, and people love to be fascinated with the paranormal, whether it be ghosts, whether it be UFOs, whatever it is. Humans are fascinated with it because we don't know what it is. We question everything. So we like to look at this from a fantasy standpoint, and sometimes it's not quite fantasy, it's reality. And that's where people get offended, I think.
Well, it's the age-old thing about, you know, our mortality. What happens next? So, I mean, that's what drives a lot of people to do this is that, you know, is there something else out there? And when then you have experiences that are real events, and then, you know, you kind of question, okay, there is something next, but now you ask, what is it? In all honesty, you really don't know until you get there.
Yep,
and if anybody tells you anything different, I would walk away because you really don't know. You don't.
Yeah, I use those statements quite a lot when people ask me the questions. It's to be frankly honest with you, we can tell you what we find. We can tell you results. We can tell you what other paranormal investigators that have been into it for years have found. But when you're asking these questions, what is it? Where did it come from? You can't answer that. There's no way to answer it.
No, there's not. And in a way, that's kind of frustrating, but in a way, to me, it's kind of comforting to know that there is a next step. What it is, it's the next big thing that you go to.
So, Peter, you have a website and a few other things. Let's talk about that a little bit here at the very tail end, so that everybody knows where to find you.
Sure. I've got two websites. One is www.lsspi.org. That's my group site. And then I have www.redoakhypnosis.com. That's my office of my hypnotherapy business.
Now, are you writing any books currently? Do you have any books that you want to tell people about?
I'm currently writing on my experiences in the field. I don't have any. I haven't put it out to any book companies yet, but I do personally know a couple of people that are in book companies that say that they're interested to see it when I'm done. I wrote a chapter in Talking with the Dead for Whitechapel Press, and I'm shoot, me and my team have been in like about 12 different books. I can't even really remember all of them, but a couple of them were Jeff Belanger's books. I think one was the Encyclopedia of Hauntings, World Encyclopedia of Hauntings, or something like that. Another one was a smaller book on I can't remember the name of it. There was one by Dr. Alan Brown called Ghost Hunters of the South, I think it was. There's one by Lisa Farwell, Haunted Texas Vacations. And then I'm also asked by a lot of personal authors too to pick my brain on things that we've done around Texas to include in their books too. So there's a lot of stuff out there. Which is kind of frustrating too, because we have a lot of stuff that's put on our website that you end up finding that people pull and put in their books, and you're like, "Well, okay."
That happens quite a lot, though, and it's great to share in the paranormal. But a lot of times, you find out that your theory or your situation or so forth comes out, and people get paranoid about that. But the reality is, guys, if you're actually in it for the study and research, this is going to happen anyway. You got to share your information. You're going to get both sides of it. That's just the way it is.
Of course.
Well, you've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston. We've been talking a very delightful conversation with Peter Haviland. I do hope I pronounced that right. I'm lousy with pronunciation, Peter, so I apologize.
That's okay.
On the truth of the paranormal, as well as the situations that he's been through. Peter, you're always welcome to come back to the show. Next week, we have a delightful guest. I will be posting that on my RTP page, Real-Time Paranormal, and you can also find me on my Facebook page and my Twitter page under Christopher Houston or PTAR, Paranormal Truth and Reality. So tune in, because she's a delightful person just starting out that's had some paranormal experiences and is well-known throughout the Hollywood crowd. You'll love her. And we have several exciting guests coming up as it is, but I'm going to end the show tonight, Paranormal Truth and Reality, with the way I ended every single weekend. Remember, as you learned today, in the paranormal, truth should always be the reality. We'll talk to you next week. It's been an absolute delight. Enjoy your evening.